Look in the cool pack. I brought along a surprise for you. You know that dark beer you like so much? You don't mean the Harkonnen ale? You'll have to drink it out here where no one can see us. Got it from a smuggler. Without using your name, of course. Romber Vernius of Ix, I am shocked to find you consorting with smugglers and black marketeers. How else do you think I managed to infiltrate supplies to the rebels on Ix? I haven't been terribly effective so far, but I have indeed contacted some highly unsavory folk. He unsealed the cool pack and rummaged around for the unlabeled bottles. And a few of them have proven, quite resourceful. The Duke guided the coracle into the current, following the lush shoreline. Thufir Hawat would probably lecture him for going so far without an Atreides honor guard. I guess I could drink a bottle or two then, as long as there's no Harkonnen profit in it. Romber removed two containers from the cool pack and squeezed the tops to extrude spice straws. None whatsoever. Apparently it was stolen during a raid on the brewery. A power outage caused a stir in the bottling plant and, somehow a pair of small geedy cattle got loose inside the factory. There was substantial confusion and a great deal of lost beer. A tragic waste. So many smashed bottles, it would have been impossible to account for them all. Standing at the coracle's engine controls, Leto sniffed at the dark liquid, stopped himself from taking a gulp. How do we know it isn't tainted? I'm not in the habit of carrying a poison snooper on board my own boat. This batch was bottled for the Baron himself. One look at his fat body, and you can well imagine how much of the stuff he must consume. Well, if it's good enough for Baron Harkonnen, salud. Leto took a sip of the bitter porter, filtered through melange crystals to enhance its flavor. Slipping onto the bench behind Leto, Romber watched the Duke take them around a rocky point and then head toward a broad delta where barges laden with pundi rice converged. The Ixian prince didn't sip from his beer yet. This is a bribe, he admitted. I need a favor. In fact, how about two favors? The Duke chuckled. For one bottle of beer? There's more in the cool pack. Look, I just want to be up front with you. Leto, I consider you my closest friend. Even if you say no, I'll understand. You'll still be my friend if I say no to both favors? Leto continued drinking through the straw. Romber slid his bottle around on the table in front of him, from hand to hand. I want to do something more significant for Ix. Something more serious. You need more money? How else can I help? Not money. Well, not exactly. I've been sending Keter Pilru funding and encouragement ever since he contacted me 4 years ago. He looked up, his forehead furrowed. Word has reached me that the freedom fighters have been decimated, with only a few survivors. I think it's worse than even he lets on. It's time for me to stop playing around. Romber's eyes hardened, taking on a look Leto had last seen on Dominic Vernius during the revolt. Let's give them some serious firepower so they can make a difference. Leto took another long sip of beer. I'll do anything within reason to help you regain your birthright, and I've always made that clear to you. What exactly do you have in mind? I'd like to send explosives, some of the plaz wafers in your armory. They're small and lightweight, so they're easily concealed and shipped. How many wafers? Romber didn't hesitate. 1,000. Leto whistled. That'll cause a lot of destruction. That's the point, Leto. He continued to steer the boat over a choppy intersection of currents toward the mouth of the river. Up ahead they could see the pilot boats and colorful sea kites flown over the barge docks. And how do you propose to get supplies onto Ix? Can your smuggler friends get the shipment to where Kater can intercept it? But Tleilaxu took control 16 years ago. They're making regular shipments again, using their own transports and special guild dispensations. They've had to loosen restrictions because they depend on outside suppliers for raw materials and special items. All the ships land on the rock shelves along the Port of Entry Canyon. The hollowed-out grottos there are big enough to accommodate warehouse frigates, and the tunnels intersect with the underground cities. Some of the frigate captains served under my father a long time ago, and they have, offered to help. Leto thought of the Earl of Ix, bald and boisterous, who had fought beside Paulus Atreides in the Akazi revolt. Based on his father's reputation as a war hero, Romber probably had more secret allies than even he realized. We can make special marked containers and get the word to Kater. I think we can pass all of the appropriate checkpoints. Suddenly angry, he pounded his fist on the wooden bench beside him. Vermilion hells, Leto, I've got to do something. I haven't been able to set foot on my own home planet for nearly half my life. If it were anyone else asking me this... Leto caught himself and said, Possibly. So long as you conceal the involvement of House Atreides. He sighed. Before I decide, what's the second favor? Now the prince seemed truly nervous. I've pondered how I should ask this, yet I couldn't come up with the right words. Everything seemed, false and manipulative. But I need to tell you. He took a deep breath. It's about my sister. Leto, about to open a second beer, stopped short. His face darkened. Some things are private matters, even from you, Romber. The prince gave him a commiserating smile. Since he had taken a Bene Gesserit as his concubine and fast friend, he had grown wiser. The two of you have gotten off track, through no one's fault. It just happened. I know you still care deeply for Kylia, and don't try to deny it. She's done a lot for House Atreides, helping with the accounts and commercial matters. My father always said she had the best instinct for business in our family. With a sad shake of his head, Leto said, She used to be full of good advice. But since Kiara came, she's demanded more and more trappings and fineries. Even when I give them to her, Kylia seems dissatisfied. She's not the same woman I fell in love with. Romber drank from his own beer, smacked his lips at the bitterness. Maybe that's because you've stopped giving her a chance, stopped letting her use her business skills. Put her in charge of one of your industries, Peridon melons, Pundi rice, coral gems, and watch the production increase. I can't imagine how far she might have gone if the revolt hadn't happened on Ix. Leto pushed his bottle aside. Did she put you up to this? Leto, my sister is a rare woman. I'm asking this as your friend, and as her brother. Romber passed a hand through his tousled blonde hair. Give Kylia the opportunity to be more than a concubine. Gazing at the exiled prince, Leto became as cold and stiff as a statue. So you want me to marry her? Romber had never used their friendship to force an issue, and Leto had never dreamed he could deny his friend anything. But this... Biting his lower lip, Romber nodded. Yes, I suppose that's what I'm asking. They both remained silent for a long, long moment as the coracle swayed. A huge barge lumbered across the delta toward the docks. Leto's thoughts churned, and he finally reached a difficult decision. He drew a deep breath, flaring his nostrils. I'll say yes to one of your favors. But you must choose which one. Romber swallowed hard, noted the anguished expression on Leto's face. After a long moment, he looked away. When he squared his shoulders, Leto was uneasy about what he would say. He had put everything on the line. Finally, the exiled Prince of Ix answered in a wavering voice, "Then I choose the future of my people. You have taught me the importance of this. I need those explosives. I just hope Keter Pilru can put them to good use." He leaned forward and took a long drink of the smuggled Harkonnen beer, then reached out to clasp Leto's forearm. "If there's one thing I've learned from the Atreides, it's to put the people foremost, and personal wishes second. Kylia will just have to understand that." The Duke took their coracle around sandbars into the river channel, toward the mounded barges bedecked with green ribbons fluttering in the breezes. People were gathered at the docks, loading sack after sack of Caladan's primary grain export. Wagons rolled up along the riverbank, while low-riding boats drifted in from flooded fields. Someone shot homemade fireworks into the air, which banged and sizzled with color in the cloudy skies. Leto brought their boat up against the main docks, near a fully loaded barge preparing to launch. A large ornamental podium, surrounded by green and white streamers, waited for him. Pushing his difficult discussion with Romber to the back of his mind, Leto put on a noble face and enjoyed the festivities. It was one of his traditional duties as Duke Atreides. Facts mean nothing when they are preempted by appearances. Do not underestimate the power of impression over reality. Crown Prince Raphael Corino, The Rudiments of Power. Baron Harkonnen hobbled to the highest tower balcony of the family keep overlooking the morass of Harko City. He leaned on his sandworm head cane and hated it. Without the cane, though, he couldn't move. "Damn the witches and what they've done to me." He had never ceased brooding on how he might get his revenge. But since both the Sisterhood and House Harkonnen held mutual blackmail information, neither could move openly against the other. "I must find a more subtle way." "Peter de Vries," he bellowed to anyone who could hear him, "send in my Mentat." De Vries lurked near him at all times, hovering there, spying and scheming. The Baron needed only to shout, and the twisted Mentat could hear. If only everyone else obeyed him as well. Rabban, the Mother Superior, even that smug Sook doctor, Yue. As expected, the feral man danced in on tiptoes, moving with rubbery limbs. He carried a sealed parcel in his arms, right on time. The Baron's engineers had promised results, and every one of them knew he would flay them alive if they failed him. "Your new suspensors, my Baron." De Vries bowed and extended the container toward his master's lumbering hulk. "If you strap them about your waist, they will decrease your body weight and allow you to move with unaccustomed freedom." Reaching out with pudgy hands, the Baron tore open the package. "The freedom I used to have!" Inside, linked together on a chain belt, were small globes of self-contained suspensors, each with its own power pack. While he didn't think he would fool anyone, at least the suspensor belt would help hide the depth of his infirmity and make others wonder. "They may require a bit of practice to use. They'll make me feel fit and healthy again." The Baron grinned as he held the suspensor globes in front of him, then fastened the belt around his grotesquely swollen waist. How had his belly grown so large? He toggled on the suspensor globes one by one. With each additional hum, he felt the weight lessening from his feet, his joints, his shoulders. Ah. The Baron took a long step and bounded across the room like an explorer on a low-gravity world. Peter, look at me! Ha ha! He landed on one foot, then sprang into the air again, leaping nearly to the ceiling. Laughing, he bounced once more, then spun on his left foot like an acrobat. This is so much better! The twisted Mentat hovered by the door, wearing a self-satisfied smile. The Baron landed again and swept his cane from side to side with a whistling sound like an athletic fencer. Exactly as I had hoped! He smacked the cane hard on the unyielding desk surface. The parameters may take some getting used to, my Baron. Don't overextend yourself, the Mentat cautioned, knowing the Baron would do exactly the opposite. With the footwork of a gross ballet dancer, Baron Harkonnen crossed the room and clapped an astonished Peter de Vries paternally on the cheeks, then moved toward the high, open balcony. As de Vries watched the big man's foolishly overconfident movements, he imagined that the Baron would misjudge his bounding strides and sail off the edge of the keep tower and into open sky. I can only hope. The suspensors would hinder his descent somewhat, but they could only lessen the immense weight. The Baron would strike the distant pavement at a slightly decreased velocity, but he would splatter across the streets nonetheless. An unexpected bonus. Since de Vries was responsible for watching over the family's various assets, including hidden spice stockpiles such as the one on Lankeville, the Baron's demise would enable him to shift ownership to himself. Dim-witted Rabban wouldn't know what was happening. Perhaps a nudge in the right direction. But the big man caught himself on the balcony rail and rebounded, settling into an enthusiastic pause. He stared across the smoky streets and sprawling buildings. The metropolis looked black and grimy. Industrial buildings and administrative towers that had sunk their roots into Gedi Prime. Beyond the city lay even dirtier agricultural and mining villages, squalid places that were barely worth the trouble of keeping in line. Far below, like lice crawling the streets, workers milled about between labor shifts. The Baron hefted his cane. I don't need this anymore. He took one last look at the silver maw of the symbolic sandworm on its head, ran his swollen fingers along the smooth wood of the shaft, then hurled the walking stick out into open space. He leaned over the railing to watch it drop, spinning and dwindling toward the streets below. He held out a childish hope that it might strike someone on the head. Buoyed by the globes on his belt, the Baron returned to the main room, where a disappointed Peter de Vries looked toward the abrupt edge of the balcony. The Mentat knew he could never scheme against the Baron, for he would be discovered and executed. The Baron could always obtain another Mentat from the Bene Tlaloc, perhaps even a new de Vries Gola grown from his own dead cells. His only hope lay in a fortuitous accident, or an acceleration of the effects of the Bene Gesserit disease. Now nothing can stop me, Peter, the Baron said, delighted. The Imperium had better watch out for Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Yes, I suppose so, the Mentat said. If you surrender, you have already lost. If you refuse to give up, though, no matter the odds against you, at least you have succeeded in trying. Duke Paulus Atreides. If he was to rescue his sister, Gurney Halleck knew he had to act alone. He planned carefully for 2 months, aching to move, knowing Beth was suffering every moment, every night. but his scheme would be doomed to fail if he didn't take every possibility into account. He obtained crude maps of Gedi Prime and laid out his route to Mount Ebony. It seemed very far away, farther than he had ever traveled in his life. He was tense, fearing the villagers would notice his activities. But they staggered through their days with gazes downcast. Even his parents said little to him, noticing nothing of his moods, as if their son had disappeared along with their daughter. Finally, as prepared as he was ever going to be, Gurney waited until darkness. And then he simply left. With a sack of kraal tubers and vegetables slung over one shoulder, and a harvesting knife tucked into his belt, he made his way across the patchwork fields. He hid from roads and patrols, sleeping during the day, traveling under the wan moonlight. He doubted searchers would come after him. The Dimitri villagers would assume that the troublemaker had been snatched away in the middle of the night by Harkonnen torturers. With any luck, they'd be afraid to report his disappearance at all. Several nights, Gurney managed to slip aboard unmanned cargo transports that crawled westward across the landscape, heading in the correct direction. Their hulking forms levitated along without stopping, all through the night. The transports took him hundreds of kilometers, allowing him to rest and brood and wait until he could find the military compound. During long hours, he listened to the throb of suspensor engines that dragged produce or minerals to processing centers. He longed for his Balaset, which he'd been forced to abandon back at home, for it was too bulky to carry on his mission. When he had the instrument, no matter how much the overlords took from his family, he could still make his own music. He missed those days. Now he just hummed to himself, all alone. Finally, he saw the looming cone of Mount Ebony, the stark and blackened remnant of a volcano whose cliffs had broken off at sharp angles. The rock itself was black, as if covered with tar. The military compound was a jigsaw puzzle of evenly spaced buildings, all square, all undecorated. It looked like an insect warren established uphill and upwind from the slave pits and obsidian mines. Between the fenced-in slave pits and the regimented military encampment lay a hodgepodge of buildings, support facilities, inns, and a small pleasure house to entertain the Harkonnen troops. So far, Gurney had made his way undetected. The Harkonnen masters could not conceive that a downtrodden laborer with little education and few resources would dare to strike out across Gedi Prime on his own, would venture to spy upon the troops with a personal goal in mind. But he had to make his way into the place where Beth must be imprisoned. Gurney hid and waited, observing the military compound and trying to formulate his plan. He came up with few alternatives. Still, he wouldn't let that stop him. A low-born, uneducated man could never hope to pass himself off as someone who belonged there, so Gurney could not infiltrate the pleasure house. Instead, he chose a daring raid. He grasped a metal pipe taken from a refuse pile and held his harvesting knife in the other hand. Stealth would be sacrificed for speed. He charged through a side door of the pleasure house and ran to the administrator, a crippled old man wired into a chair at the front table. "Where's Beth?" the intruder yelled, surprised to hear his own voice after so long. He thrust the point of his blade under the old man's sinewy chin. "Beth Halleck, where is she?" Gurney reeled for a moment. What if Harkonnen pleasure houses never bothered with the names of their women? Trembling, the old man saw death in Gurney's blazing eyes and the scars on his face. "Chamber 21, he said in a croak. Gurney dragged the administrator, chair and all, into a closet and locked him in. Then he raced up the hall. A few surly customers stared at him, some half-dressed in Harkonnen uniforms. He heard screams and thumps from behind closed doors, but he had no time to investigate the atrocities. His concentration focused only on one thing. Chamber 21. Beth. His vision tunneled down to a pinpoint until he located the door. His audacity had bought him a little time, but it would be only moments before Harkonnen soldiers were called. He didn't know how fast he could get Beth out and into hiding. Together they could race across the landscape, vanish into the wilderness. After that, he didn't know where they would go. He couldn't think. He only knew that he had to try. The number was scribed on the lintel in Imperial Gallic. He heard a scuffle inside. Using his muscular shoulder, Gurney battered the door. It splintered at the jamb and caved in with a heavy thud. Beth! Letting out a wild roar, he rushed into the dimly lit chamber, knife in one hand, metal club in the other. From the bed, she gave a muffled cry, and he turned to see her tied up with thin metal cables. Thick grease had been smeared over her breasts and lower body like war paint, and two naked Harkonnen soldiers lurched back from their activities like startled snakes. Both men held strangely shaped tools, one of which sparked and sizzled. Gurney didn't want to imagine what they'd been doing, had forced himself not to contemplate the sadistic tortures that Beth endured daily. His roar became a strangled cry in his throat as he saw her, and froze in shock. The vision of his sister's humiliation, the tragic sight of what had happened to her in the intervening 4 years, doomed his rescue attempt to failure. He hesitated only an instant, his jaw dropping. Beth had changed so much, her face drawn and aged, her body wiry and bruised. So different from the silken 17-year-old he had known. During the fraction of a second that Gurney stood motionless, his angry momentum stalled. It took the Harkonnen soldiers only a heartbeat to leap from the bed and fall upon him. Even without their gauntlets, boots, or body armor, the men pummeled him to the floor. They knew exactly where to strike. One of the men jabbed a sparking device against his throat, and his entire left side went numb. He thrashed uncontrollably. Beth could only make wordless, breathy sounds as she struggled against the wires that held her to the bed. Oddly, he noticed a long, thin scar tracing a white line along her throat. She had no larynx. Gurney couldn't see her anymore as his vision turned crimson. He heard heavy footsteps and shouts thundering down the halls. Reinforcements. He couldn't get up. With a sagging heart, he realized he had failed. They would kill him and probably murder Beth, too. If only I hadn't hesitated. That instant of uncertainty had defeated him. One of the men looked down, lips drawn in a rictus of fury. Spittle ran from the left corner of his mouth, and his blue eyes, which might have been handsome at another time, on another person, glared at him. The guard snatched the harvesting knife and the metal pipe from Gurney's limp hands and held them both up. Grinning, the Harkonnen soldier tossed the knife aside, but kept the pipe. "We know where to send you, lad," he said. He heard Beth's odd whispering again, but she could form no words. Then the guard swung the metal pipe down on Gurney's head. Dreams are as simple or as complicated as the dreamer. Leet Kynes. In the Footsteps of My Father. As armed men led the two young freemen deeper into a warren within the glacial mountainside, Leet Kynes held his tongue. He studied details, trying to understand who these fugitives were. Their threadbare purple and copper uniforms seemed to have been modeled after military fashion. The tunnels had been chewed into walls of permafrost cemented dust and lined with a clear polymer. The air remained cold enough that Leet could see his own breath, a dramatic reminder of how much moisture left his lungs each time he exhaled. "So, are you smugglers?" Warwick asked. At first his eyes remained downcast with embarrassment to have been caught so easily. But soon he was intrigued and looked around. Dominic Vernius glanced back at them as they kept pace. "Smugglers, and more, lads. Our mission goes beyond mere profit and self-interest." He did not seem angry. Beneath the mustache, bright white teeth flashed in a sincere grin. His face possessed an open quality, and his bald pate shone like polished wood. His eyes contained hints of sparkle, but what might have been a good-natured personality now held an emptiness, as if a large part of the man had been stolen and replaced with something far inferior. "Aren't you showing them too much, Dom?" said a pock-faced man whose right eyebrow was a waxy burn scar. "It's always been just us who've proved our loyalty with blood. No outsiders, right, Asuyo?" "Can't say I trust the Freeman any less than that Tuic man. And we do business with him, eh?" said one of the other men, a lean veteran with a shock of bristly gray-white hair. On his worn overalls and uniform, he had painstakingly added old insignia of rank and a few scraps of medals. "Tuic sells water, but he has an oily quality to him." The bald smuggler continued deeper into the complex without pausing. "Jodam, these lads found us without me showing them a thing. We've been sloppy. Just be glad it was Freeman instead of Sardaukar. Freeman don't have any more love for the Emperor than we do, right, lads?" Leet and Warwick looked at each other. "Emperor Shaddam is far away, and he knows nothing of Dune. He knows nothing of honor, either." A storm crossed Dominic's face, but he calmed himself by changing the subject. "I've heard that the Imperial Planetologist has gone native, that he's become a Freeman himself and talks about remaking the planet. Is this true? Does Shaddam support these activities?" "The Emperor is not aware of any ecological plans." Leet withheld his true Freeman identity, said nothing about his father, and introduced himself by his other appellation. "My name is Weichi." "Well, it's good to have grandiose, impossible dreams." Dominic looked distant for a moment. "We all have them." Leet was not certain what the big man meant. "So why are you hiding here? Who are you?" The others deferred to Dominic. "We've been here 15 years now, and this is only one of our bases. We have a more important one off-world, but I still have a soft spot for our first hiding hole on Arrakis." Warwick nodded. "You have created your own seat here." Dominic stopped at an opening where broad plaza windows looked down into a deep chasm between the towering cliffs. On the flat, gravelly bottom of the fissure, a fleet of mismatched ships sat parked in regimented order. Around one of the lighters, small figures hurried to load cases of cargo, preparing for liftoff. "We have a few more amenities than a siege, lad, and a more cosmopolitan outlook." He studied the two freemen. "But we must retain our secrets. What tipped you off, lads? Why did you come here? How did you see through our camouflage?" When Warwick started to speak, Leet cut him off to say, "And what do we receive in exchange for telling you this?" "Your lives, eh?" Asuyo said gruffly. His gray-white hair bristled. Leet shook his head, standing firm. "You could kill us even after we pointed out all the mistakes you've made. You're outlaws, not freemen. Why should I trust your word?" Outlaws? Dominic gave a bitter laugh. The laws of the Imperium is the Emperor himself. Old Elrud and now Shaddam. His haunted eyes held their distant, unfocused look. Damned Carinos. Taking one step away from the cliff wall windows, he paused again. You lads aren't thinking of turning me into the Sardaukar, are you? I'm sure there's still an incredible bounty on my head. Warwick looked at his friend. Both wore puzzled expressions. We don't even know who you are, sir. Some of the smugglers chuckled. Dominic let out a sigh of relief, then showed a flash of disappointment. He puffed up his chest. I was a hero of the Akazi Revolt, married one of the Emperor's concubines. I was overthrown when invaders took over my world. Tiglitz, Freeman explained. Occasionally he longed to journey off-planet, though he doubted he would ever have the opportunity. The bald man stroked the polymer-lined walls. Being inside these tunnels always reminds me of Ix. His voice, wistful and empty, trailed off. That's why I chose this place. Why I keep coming back here from our other base. Dominic emerged from his reverie, as if surprised to see his fellow smugglers still there. Asuyo, Jodam, we'll take these lads to my private office. With a wry smile, he looked back at the two young men. It's modeled after a chamber in the Grand Palais, as close as I could remember it. I didn't have time to take blueprints when we packed up and fled. The bald man marched ahead, reciting the story of his life, as if it were dry text from a history film book. My wife was murdered by Sardaukar. My son and daughter now live in exile on Caladan. Early on, I made one raid against Ix and almost died in the process. Lost a lot of my men, and Jodam barely pulled me out alive. Since then, I've been in hiding, doing what I could to hurt those sligs, the Padishah emperors and the Lansrad turncoats who betrayed me. They passed storage hangars where equipment hid under tarpaulins, workbenches and mechanical bays where machines lay strewn about in various stages of disassembly or repair. But my work hasn't amounted to much more than vandalism, wrecking Carino monuments, defacing statues, staging embarrassing stunts, being a general nuisance to Shaddam. Of course, with his new daughter Josepha, that's four girls and no son, no heir, he's got more problems than I can make for him. Behind him, pock-faced Jodam growled, causing trouble for the Carinos has become our way of life. Asuyo scratched his bristly hair and spoke in a harsh voice. We all owe Erovernius our lives many times over, and we're not about to let any harm come to him. I gave up my commission, my benefits, even a decent rank in the Imperial military to join this motley group. We won't let any Freeman pups give away our secrets, eh? You can trust the word of a Freeman, Warwick said indignantly. But we haven't given our word, Leet pointed out, his eyes narrow and hard. Yet. They reached a room appointed clumsily with fine trappings, as if a man with no cultural finesse had gathered items he could remember, but which didn't entirely fit together. Faux gold coins overflowed from chests, making the room look like a pirate's treasure house. The casual treatment of the commemorative pieces, struck with Shaddam's face on one side and the golden lion throne on the other, gave the impression that the bald man did not know what else to do with all the money he had stolen. Dominic ran a calloused hand through a bowl of shimmering emerald spheres, each the size of his small fingernail. Moss pearls from Harmonthep. Shando always loved these, said the color was a perfect shade of green. Unlike Rondo Tuic, the bald man did not appear to revel in his private trappings for their own sake, but he drew comfort from the memories they brought him. After sending Jodam and Asuyo away, Dominic Bernius sat down in a padded purple chair, indicating cushions on the opposite side of a low table for his visitors. Colors ranging from scarlet to crimson flowed like polished. Dominic rapped the low table with his knuckles, causing a burst of color to spread out across the grain. The sap still flows when heated by warm lights, even years after the tree was cut down. He stared at the walls and hangings, inexpensive, as if Dominic had drawn them from too clear memories, but with too little artistic training. My men fought with me in the Bloodwood forests on Ekaz. We killed many rebels there, torched their base deep in the forest. You saw Jodam and Asuyo. They were two of my captains. Jodam lost his brother there, in the forests. He took a long, shuddering breath. That was back when I willingly shed blood for the Emperor, when I swore my allegiance to Elrud the Ninth and expected a reward in return. He offered me anything I wanted, and I took the one thing that angered him. Beside him, Dominic reached into a glazed pot filled with golden commemorative coins. Now I do everything I can against the Emperor. Leet frowned. But Elrud has been dead for many years, since I was a baby. Shaddam the Fourth now sits on the Golden Lion throne. Warwick sat next to his friend. We don't hear much news of the Imperium, but even I know that. Alas, Shaddam is as bad as his father. In his hands, Dominic played with several of the faux gold coins, jingling them together. He sat up straight, as if he suddenly realized how many years had passed, how long he'd been hiding. Very well, then, listen to me. We are, of course, indignant and offended that you have trespassed here. Two lads. What are you, 16? A smile wrinkled the leathery skin on Dominic's face. Embarrassed that you... I would very much like for you to go outside and show us what you noticed. Name your price, and I'll meet it. Leet's mind whirled as he considered the resources and skills this group had. Treasure lay all around, but neither of them could use baubles like the green pearls. Some of the tools and equipment, being cautious, as Leet did a very Freeman thing. We will agree, Dominic Bernius, but I stipulate that we hold your obligation in abeyance. When I wish to receive a boon from you, I will ask, as will Warwick. For now, we will instruct your men in how to make your hideout invisible. Leet smiled. Even to Freeman. Bundled as the two young men indicated the imperfectly covered tracks, the discoloration in the glacial cliffside wall, the two obvious paths that led up the rock slope. Even when the freemen pointed out these things, some of the smugglers still couldn't see what should have been plain to them. Still, Jodam scowled and promised to make the suggested changes. Dominic Vernius stood breathing cold air and shaking his head in amazement. No matter how much security one adds to a home, there are always ways to breach it. His lips drew downward in a frown. Generations of planners tried to develop perfect isolation on Ix. Only our royal family understood the whole system. What a monumental waste of effort, Harry.